Hey, oh, here we go. It's We Talk Fantasy Football Season 2 for the 2012 edition. Week 1 preview? I think we'd probably call it that. What do you think, Brett?
Well, it's better. It's more preview than it actually is anything else.
Yeah, I'm Mo. This is, of course, Brett. We're on Brett's patio drinking Diet Cola and talking fantasy football. Basically, what we got here is what we think we're going to do on this one. Last year, we talked about strategies, winning strategies and losing strategies, and then we went and kind of ran down by division what players to avoid and what players to look at. And this year, what we're going to do is, I think, not probably do that. We're going to actually have, instead of just a preview at the beginning of the season, we're actually going to have a weekly show this year and some more good stuff related to that. So what we're going to do now is give you kind of some value picks, trends, and lessons learned from last year. But first off, Brett, why don't you tell everybody kind of, we wouldn't call ourselves experts. We're fantasy fans, and we're giving a fantasy football podcast from a fan's point of view. But nevertheless, we do have some credentials. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about us in fantasy football?
Well, I mean, we've been playing the game for many, many, many years now. And as a general rule, we play a lot of leagues. And the thing about playing a lot of leagues is that it's not just that we play, but we tend to be successful at those leagues. We usually don't consider it to be a successful season unless we've won probably, I would say, between, you know, 2 to 3 championships out of the volume of leagues that we play and make the playoffs in probably 75% of the leagues.
Yeah, I'd say playoff, 75% of the leagues is about right, and championships usually about 33% of the leagues. We usually play in about 10 to 12 leagues a year combined. Usually we're playing as a team, and a couple times we'll go head-to-head. So, yeah, we usually do pretty well. So we're just going to talk a little bit about that. Now, that said, last year, the year we did our first podcast, wasn't necessarily our best year.
It felt wrong, I think, and that was the biggest problem. Like, I think we went into it almost with, and I don't necessarily want to say an inflated sense of self just because of suddenly doing a podcast, but it almost felt like some of the decisions that we were making, we were second-guessing a little bit more.
I think it was, you know, there was trends and changes in fantasy football that have probably been slowly evolving over the last few years, and we might have been one season behind because we'd had so much success with our previous patterns. And so that's really why we want to talk about lessons learned. So what did we learn last year that we did that this year we're going to do differently?
Well, I think one of the number one things is to watch out for where you're drafting running backs and versus quarterbacks. Everybody talks about the whole drafting a quarterback first, and lots of people are drafting running backs first. But I think the thing is that we were always against drafting a quarterback early, because there was no way that you were going to get the best value by choosing a quarterback early.
Best player, perhaps, but not best value.
Yeah.
Those are different things.
Yes. And I think that this year, that's one of the things that we realized, is that the drop-off on the major running backs comes so soon that I think you are actually better off to acquire one of the elite quarterbacks as opposed to going with... Before, you would go with an average running back over everybody else just because there were so few running backs. There's still so few running backs, but now you just need the points.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things is last year we were telling you we were looking at drafting a quarterback late because we're still getting good value in the quarterbacks late. We were getting, in the past, we've won, you know, in round 8, round 10, drafting quarterbacks because we had such depth in other positions. Including wide receivers. So we would look at wide receivers in the first 5 rounds, a couple of them, and, you know, maybe 3 running backs. And the shift really, the quarterbacks are scoring so much now that a great quarterback can win your league all by yourself. It just, that's the case. You know, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers can win you a league all by yourselves. I mean, last year by accident, one time I ended up taking Aaron Rodgers. That was the only championship I won. You know, as an individual player. So, I mean, it can absolutely happen. Now, that said, we're not necessarily thinking most of the time, if you're early in the draft, to take the quarterback. We're not saying if you're first overall that you should take a quarterback still.
No, I mean, like, I think nowadays, if you're first overall, you're absolutely talking about one of the few workhorse backs. You're talking about the Arian Foster. You're talking about the Ray Rice. You are talking about one of those backs because there's so few backs. And the biggest problem with the running backs is there's so many running backs that come with so many question marks. Is Maurice Jones-Drew going to play? Because if he is, then he could be a workhorse back and be a great workhorse back. But if he doesn't, well, then you've just blown a pick.
Yeah, which we've probably already run across once already this year.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's really hard, based on previous output, to not want to choose Maurice Jones-Drew, just no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And that said, because we chose him, we ended up jumping on Rashad Jennings earlier than we would have ever considered in any other situation, because we felt we had to back ourselves up there. Which is almost like, spending two picks on one player, potentially, and that can be devastating.
Yeah.
One of the things that we talk about drop-off, Brent, that's kind of our strategy that we've developed over the years, and we're probably, I mean, while we're seeing changes in trends and in how we draft, we're not going to get rid of the drop-off, because that strategy we believe in. So explain to everybody what we mean by that.
Well, the drop-off occurs when you reach a certain point where you feel that the players below a certain player are just not as good as the players above the drop-off. You know, there could be five running backs that you consider to be ahead of everybody else, that are true workhorse running backs that you have no questions about. Well, everybody after that is the drop-off. And I think, and then even then, more so, there'll be a next core group of running backs that you could like. And then after that, there's another drop-off.
Exactly. So maybe there's five running backs who you're like, those guys are every week, you play them, they can win you games by themselves. Then you say maybe there's 10 guys who I trust playing. And then everybody after that is the next level where it's like, I don't trust them anymore.
Yeah, the same concept of wide receiver one, wide receiver two, wide receiver three. But there are guys who are absolutely going to be wide receiver twos who are going to be in a different level, because you just can't guarantee that they're going to be wide receiver twos.
Yeah, I mean, you look at wide receivers and I go, there's high end, there's low end. I don't really look at a running back and say there's a high end number one or low end number two. It's like, you're just, I trust playing you or I don't. And that's, when we talk about how quarterbacks are the trend, and in a lot of ways they are, there's still value at quarterback, whereas if we don't draft running backs early, I get really scared really quick. Now, the difference, I think, isn't that we're staying away from running backs this year. It's that we're staying away from wide receivers as a general rule later than we have before, because there's such tremendous depth there.
Well, you're pretty much guaranteed the opportunity to get a wide receiver three quite late in the draft, whereas before, that's always been an issue. Before, you were kind of left with the Michael Jenkins of the world, and you were very scared because you knew you weren't going to get much in the way of production. Now, I mean, a guy like Kenny Britt is falling till later in the draft, and granted, he's got high knucklehead factor, but when playing right, his production is off the charts.
And knucklehead factor is another thing we definitely look at, Brett.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there are so many guys in the NFL that have a high knucklehead factor. I mean, you look at a guy like Kenny Britt. Here's a guy who's getting arrested every second day, and you just don't know if that guy is going to be suspended. You don't know if he's going to do something stupid in the middle of the season and get benched. And guys like that with a high knucklehead factor, you know, you look at a guy like a Chad Johnson, Terrell Owens. I mean, these are guys who are getting bounced from the league because they have a high knucklehead factor. People just don't have time for them.
You get a guy like Willis McGahee, who last year ended up producing pretty good numbers. And we had a chance to draft him a bunch. We're like, we're not touching him because he has a lot high knucklehead factor. So it bit us in the ass on that occasion. That said, more often than not, I'm glad I'm not the guy who took those guys, because it does, that bites you in the ass even more.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's been no shortage of times. You're never going to make 100% of the right decisions.
At some point in time, you have to take a Kenny Britt because he's too talented.
Yeah, and what it comes down to is where is the value of that knucklehead? I mean, if Kenny Britt's available in round 12, well, then you say to yourself, okay, sure, he's a knucklehead, but in round 12, who else am I going to pick? That guy's probably not going to be somebody who I'm even holding on to anyways. Kenny Britt is a guy who at least stands a chance of me holding on to him. So it's that ratio of value versus knucklehead factor.
That said, I don't think Britt's falling to the 12th round ever.
No.
But based on per-game production last year, he should have been drafted in the second or third round by most, you would think. Right? Instead, he's dropping to what round do you think is a good round to draft him at?
I mean, I think that in a lot of drafts, probably the eighth round.
Yeah, in a 12-team Serpentine draft, or snake draft, snake format. Yeah, about the eighth round?
Probably the eighth, yeah.
Yeah, about the eighth round is probably about right for where you are looking at. So if you're thinking, he's so good, I'm going to take him in the fifth, you're hedging your bets.
Good luck
to you. And it could work out. I'm not going to say it won't, because he has tremendous physical skill. But what he doesn't have is the head to match it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, and one of the things I think that annoys me about it is the problem is that when we hear so many of the experts talk, they talk about the numbers just based on the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to us, doesn't matter nearly as much as per-game production.
Yeah.
I want to know, because you can look at a player and he can come out and be like, oh, he could have had an amazing season. But if you look at his per-game production, then he could have had three awesome games and 12 really terrible ones and one average one in there, and that's his season.
Yeah.
You need to know the per-game production. A quarterback could play on a horrible, horrible team and have great production because of garbage time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean anything when you look at just
the season. He's just chucking up at the end of the end of the fourth quarter and putting up points. And that's the thing. So we talk about the drop-off point. Basically what we did, and we explained this last year, and just quickly go over it again, is we'll have tiers. So we'll look at quarterbacks, and we'll say, who's the first tier, Brett? Who you got? You got Drew Brees.
Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady. Probably.
And, that's it. That's the first tier.
Yeah.
Those are your studs, right? And you get your second tier is guys like Cam Newton. Eli Manning. I wish I could think of more. I'm just drawing a blank here.
But. Yeah. But needless to say, though, like, as good as the quarterbacks are, there isn't actually all that many that would be in that second tier. Like, maybe Matt Ryan, but he needs to...
Matt Ryan, yeah. Potentially looks like he's going to be in the second tier this year.
But even then, you probably put him in a third tier just because he hasn't proven it.
Yeah. So the point is, though, is that first tier, you're sitting there going, those are the studs. Second tier, you're sitting there going, those are great starters. Third tier, you're sitting there going, I'm still comfortable with that guy. So, I mean, yeah, there's a drop-off between between two and three, but you might be sitting there going, I'm comfortable taking a guy in that third tier. There's a point where the drop-off reaches where it's like, I'm not comfortable anymore. If you're having to start Ryan Fitzpatrick every single week because you waited to the fourth tier to take your quarterback, that's when you stop being comfortable.
Yeah, right? Because there's a point where the tier drop-off is just untenable. You cannot successfully win a league with a lot of those quarterbacks. Like, you can look and say, like, oh, well, I'm happy with that, and I'm going to pick two guys from that tier. But two guys from the fourth tier do not equal one guy from the first tier by no stretch.
No, but not even close. And that's the other thing is you have to make your own tiers. Like, where I might have Ben Roethlisberger is not the same place as you might have him. I would have Ben Roethlisberger hovering between the third and fourth tier. So I might take him on my team, but I really don't want him.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you might think he's comfortably in the third tier. So that's something you have to develop for yourself.
Well, and those things also matter greatly depending on flow of the draft.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking and suddenly a whole bunch of your tier picks kind of go away, but Ben Roethlisberger is the only guy, well, suddenly you have that, like, yeah, you know, maybe I better take that guy, because he is by far the best of the people that are left in this case.
So really what you need to do is look to yourself and think to yourself, how many quarterbacks, the one I'm making on my list, do I feel comfortable playing? If it's 10, then you need to draft within that 10, right? Same thing if for running backs. Wide receivers, like we say, that's the one you can wait on. Wide receivers is the one where there's so much depth and there's so many good prospects and potential sleepers. It's ridiculous. Not quarterback, I don't think, has a lot of sleepers. Running back still has a lot of sleepers.
Oh, yeah.
There's still a lot of guys out there.
Sleepers.
But quarterback, not quite as many. I think you kind of know what you're getting as a general rule. But wide receivers has so many again. So, yeah, what we're saying is load up early on running backs. Get yourself a decent, good quality, high-end quarterback, and only take a wide receiver if you just can't resist taking him at his position because you know he's fallen too far.
Well, and I think one of the things that we're noticing this year more so than anything is the flow of the draft is the most important element in fantasy right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, we used to be able to easily win leagues by saying, okay, I'm going to draft running back, wide receiver, running back, wide receiver, quarterback. That's
yeah,
the first like 8 rounds.
It's like a coach who writes a script.
Yeah.
You know, for his plays, he's sticking with that script no matter what the score is and no matter what the situation is. He's got a script for what he's doing. Run play, short run play, pass play. He writes it. He writes the first 50 scripts. Plays, you know, scripts them out.
Yeah,
we used to do that. We did that for drafting. This round is a quarterback. This round is a running back. This round is, we had it all written down. Now it's a little bit more reactionary.
Yeah, because you can't do it like that. If somebody, because there are so many guys, like before, you used to be able to guarantee that 10 running backs would go off the board pretty much for sure, unless it was one random person who skewed something out. But now the problem is that the skew is like a tight end like Gronkowski going into the first round.
Mm-hmm.
The randomness is totally different because now you could get Aaron Rodgers going first overall. You could get Arian Foster going first overall. You could get Ray Rice going first overall. There is no consensus first overall, second overall, etc.
No, there isn't. No. So where do you kind of see a tight end going for you?
For me, I still hate to draft a tight end. Now, a lot of people talk about the depth at tight ends, and for me, the comfort level on most of the tight ends is so small that I actually only have about 5 tight ends that I would even include as like a top tier tight end. And then I have about another 5 that I would include in a second tier, and everything after that is almost off the board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it falls off pretty quickly. On the other hand, I usually feel like I'm getting good value late still with one. And it doesn't seem to me like in most drafts, people are jumping on tight ends as early as they have in past years.
No, it's only the special ones. The Jimmy Graham, the Rob Gronkowskis, and probably to a certain degree the Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, those Hernandez guys might outperform Gronkowski this year. Don't be at all surprised.
That's Mo's pick of the...
That's one of them.
Early preseason pick.
It's just... Gronkowski is a beast, and in that end zone he's a beast. On the other hand, he's had to play through a lot of injuries. Not that Hernandez hasn't, but Gronkowski has had to play through a lot of injuries, and it's probably a career year. I said the same thing with Chris Johnson. Last year, everybody's like, oh, Chris Johnson's the one. I was like, yeah, so that was a career year. You do realize he might be great again in the future. He's never doing that again.
Yeah.
And that's the case for Gronkowski. He's never doing what he did again last year. He might still be terrific. He might get 12 TDs, but he's not getting 15 again.
Well, shall we say that, though, then? This is our WTFF first prediction. Aaron Hernandez outperforms Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, I think Gronkowski probably has the bigger games because he'll have those games where he gets 3 TDs. But per game basis, season, end of the season, I think Hernandez is probably the guy I think will end up with the better stats of the two of them.
All right, well, we'll revisit that at the end of the year.
Yeah, hopefully it will look great. So who else is out there that you think people should know about that they might not be thinking of?
On the tight ends?
Okay, let's go tight ends.
Well, Oh, like I say, I mean, I think some of you are interesting guys. There's been a lot of talk about Kyle Rudolph. He seems to, in Minnesota, he seems to have a lot of good chemistry going with Ponder there.
Yep.
And so I think that he could be one of those sneaky number ones. A lot of people are talking him up. A lot of people are talking up Jared Cook in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with Greg Olsen. People have always talked about Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
And I think that now that he's in Chudzinski's offense in Carolina, he showed pretty well, but he was splitting time with Jeremy Shockey. This year, he's not splitting time with Jeremy Shockey. And I feel like...
If you add up the stats of Shockey and Olsen combined last year...
He was a damn good tight end.
That would have been the second or third highest scoring tight end in fantasy football. So, I mean, the projection is that he could end up with that. It probably went up quite that high. Top eight, though, I think is very likely.
Absolutely likely. So many people are talking up Fred Davis. But mm-hmm. to me, Fred Davis worries the crap out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
He is totally one of those guys. Like, I don't know how Robert Griffin is going to throw to the tight end. He could be super good. Because he's a very talented player. But I worry totally about where he's getting drafted as a general rule. I understand, you know, Chris Cooley just got released, and so he doesn't have that competition anymore.
Well, and he has shown to be a good you know, receiving tight end in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, you know, he's got the talent to do it. Whether or not he is, he's kind of off my main radar because I'm worried about him.
Yeah. Now, a guy that I like personally is Jared Cook. And I think he might be he's certainly top five downfield receiving threat tight ends in the NFL. And Walker, I think, is going to end up winging it a few times.
No way.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he has potential because I look at... This partially does matter on Britt. Britt's a great downfield threat.
And that new guy that they drafted seems really good. He seems to have a lot of chemistry.
Yeah, that's true. But, let me look up the name for you here so we can sound like we know what the frick we're talking about. Kendall Wright?
Kendall Wright.
That's it?
Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
Yeah, that said, we didn't have to look it up, so we don't know what we're talking about. But, you know, you do what you can.
You know, sometimes you can't memorize every single player, especially the rookies.
No, that's true. But I like Jared Cook because Britt is a great downfield threat. Now, say this about Britt, and I've said this to you before. I like angry. When it's a receiver, I want a guy who's angry. Because those guys, receivers who are angry, will play with a chip on their shoulder, tend to show more. And Kenny Britt falls in that category. And we'll get a little more into the anger receivers in a bit. But he's still fragile, and he still would be suspended for some games. He's still a knucklehead. So if he's not the downfield threat, I think Jared Cook will be. So I think he's a sleeper.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean...
That said, you can't draft him to be your number one.
No, buyer beware in that case. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's got some potential. You know, one of the deep, deep sleepers that I like at tight end is Kobe Fleener.
Hmm.
Besides having the worst name in the history of the NFL, perhaps, this guy...
I don't know. There were some bad ones.
Yeah.
But, wasn't there a guy named Skip Cap?
Skip Cap. Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fleener is one of those guys. I just actually like saying that word. Fleener.
Fleener.
But
he's a Fleener.
I think that Andrew Luck is going to have to throw the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that his knowledge of Fleener from playing with him in college is going to come in real handy. Now, I don't think that there's going to be a lot of people that are out
there. They haven't shown well together in preseason.
No. But, you know, preseason is one of those cases where so many people lend it so much credence, but you're playing vanilla offenses against vanilla defenses. You're not really installing anything super special. You're just going out there and trying to take what the defenses give you and to see what you've got playing with you. He already knows what he's got with Fleener.
That's absolutely true. And Andrew Luck, I mean, draft him late as your second. Definitely try and get him in a keeper league, no question. But that's probably all you can... I mean, he's a great talent. But that's all you can look at him for. But I like Reggie Wayne this year as a guy who's going to be great value.
Oh, absolutely.
He seems to have good chemistry with Luck. He's still the best receiver on the team. He's not as old as you think he is. He's not. I don't think he's shot. Up until last year, he was tremendously consistent, and he's fallen a lot. So, what does it take to put a flyer on Reggie Wayne late? Not much to me. I think that's one of the guys. That's the guy in Indianapolis I look at and think great value. The other thing in Indianapolis, do not even. I don't care if, like, if you are in a league that says that you have to play two running backs and you only have one, and every other running back in the league has been drafted, find a way to still not draft one of theirs.
Oh, Donald Brown is possibly... No, he's not the worst starter in the league, but he's very, 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 very close.
Who's worse?
Well, I would probably say Sean Green is worse, but...
Sean Green's awful. Yeah. I still think Donald Brown's actually even worse.
He might be. But, you know, there's a couple of teams that have some really horrific running back situations. Indianapolis is right up or down there. So.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the running back situation right now in Detroit is awful too, which is too bad because of how great their offense potentially is. Again, who's the guy you're going to look at who you want to steal? Titus Young.
Titus Young. And here's one of those crazy things that coming out of Detroit, because everybody is talking up Kevin Smith, everybody, and I don't know how many seasons have we been listening to the experts talking up Kevin Smith as this is the guy who's going to turn your fantasy team around, and is it a week, 2 weeks, is it 2 minutes into a game, and he gets injured, and suddenly your fantasy team is not turned around.
And you know what? People are like, well, he had a comeback season last year. He did. It's relative, though. He had a comeback season based on how low your expectations were. Not really on a great per-game average.
No, because, again, he played one game and proceeded to get injured in the next game.
Yeah.
And, yes, when he's out there not injured, he does look very good. I think he does have enough talent to play in the NFL. I would love it if he was able to stay healthy. Guess what? He's not going to stay healthy, period.
No, exactly. And Javon Best doesn't look like he'll play at all. So, Mikel LeShore, I hope I'm saying the name right.
Could be, but...
He's the guy to own there, but, yeah, I mean, I don't say own to start. I just say you own in case he emerges, which I wouldn't expect.
Cincinnati,
by the way, also might have the worst run game in the league. It's awful, too.
Yeah, because again, like, you take a system running back like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and you put him in another system, and you ask him to suddenly go from, like, you know, 10 to 15 touches per game to 20 to 25 touches per game and to carry the load, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so who has worse situation here? Indianapolis and their terrible run game, or the Dolphins and their terrible receiving game?
Oh, the Dolphins.
Yeah.
For me, it's absolutely the Dolphins, because Indianapolis, you know, Donald Brown has shown some level of promise in one or two plays per game. Vic Ballard has shown some level of promise through the preseason. Whereas in the Dolphins' case, none of their receivers should be on a UFL or spring football league team, period. None of the receivers should play anywhere near pro football.
Mm-hmm. Pop Warner.
Pop Warner. They don't even deserve to be on an arena league team.
No. Nope.
That's how bad their receivers are.
No, exactly. Some people, I think, are wondering, and so give your opinion on this, given the horrific offensive line, which might be as bad as the Dolphins' receiving core, and the terrible quarterbacking situation, where... Does a guy like Larry Fitzgerald fall?
Well, the thing about Larry Fitzgerald is that Larry Fitzgerald is one of those players who actually makes things happen just by simply being there. You get the ball within a certain vicinity, Larry Fitzgerald will catch that ball 9 times out of 10. But Larry Fitzgerald will just beat the crap out of the defensive backs, and he will gain positive yardage because simply due to sheer will. Larry Fitzgerald has managed to overcome some of the worst quarterbacking in recent memory to still put up consistent 1,200-odd yard seasons. he is just more of a force of nature than a lot of these other players.
You know, I talk about, I love an angry wide receiver. I think outside, Jerry Rice was not an angry wide receiver. And he's the greatest ever. That said, if I look at most of the other greats, or the ones that put up those fantasy points, most of them have that chip on their shoulder. You know, there are exceptions, but most of them are like that. Terrell Owens, when he was great, had a chip on his shoulder. Randy Moss, angry receiver.
Yep.
You know, Steve Smith, angry receiber.
The angriest, probably.
The angriest. Hines Ward, angry receiver, right? I love that guy. So that said, there's a few guys this year that I think, angry guy, they have my interest because of that. So what are your thoughts on my kind of angry guy theory about receivers?
No, I mean, I totally get. I think actually what it comes down to is a bit of a change in the league. Because when Jerry Rice was playing, you know, a guy like Steve Largent was playing as well.
Yeah.
These are great receivers. They didn't need to be angry.
No.
Because they were just better. They just knew how to do their jobs better than the other guys. Nowadays, you can still know how to do your job well, but it's so hard because defensive schemes have changed so much over the past, you know, 15 to 20 years, that you almost have to add an extra element to your game. And I think angry is the extra element that wins that. You can be better, but you have to be angry to be that much better.
Exactly. Again, it's not, angry doesn't mean knucklehead. They are different.
Ooh, Anquan Smith is not a knucklehead.
No, Anquan Boldin, angry receiver. That's what gave him all that great success. He's so angry. He's not a knucklehead, you know. So here's some guys I'm just going to roll through here and mention that are angry. And for that reason, I'd still get them, even if they have the knucklehead factor. Brandon Marshall.
He's got a high knucklehead factor, but he is an angry receiver. But the thing is that even with throughout his high knucklehead factor, he's been a consistent producer. And so that's as good as I need.
Steve Johnson.
Stevie Johnson. He is a whack job, but he is a consistent producer on a relatively average offense. I mean, Chan Gailey's scheme is usually, you can usually pick that up pretty quickly. But he is, he's definitely a producer.
Dez Bryant.
Well, if this guy can avoid all of the problems that have plagued him over the first couple of years, then he could be one of the top five receivers in the game. Absolutely. And I mean, I'm hearing tell that Jerry Jones has set up, a person to kind of follow him around and to, like,
because that works so well with Pac-Man Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
When he did that.
Yeah, like they're setting up different things to try to keep him under wraps. And yeah, if that works, it's great. And hopefully, but it really has to come from inside. But he is a top talent. But he, oddly enough, has not been able to put everything together.
No, not yet. But another guy, anchor receiver for me. Justin Blackmon.
Mm. This guy, well, besides being a physical monster, Justin Blackmon, you know, you talk about whatever you think of Blaine Gabbert.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really matter. Like, if Blaine Gabbert is good, bad, or horrific, it doesn't matter, because the number one guy that he wants to throw to is Justin Blackmon.
Mm-hmm.
And if Justin Blackmon is the beast that he seems to be, then he is going to catch 75% of those. And you know what? 75% of, or you know, like 70% of 10 passes is 7 catches. If this guy gets 7 catches a game, he's going to take a lot of those for some big yards.
DeSean Jackson, angry guy.
He is totally an angry guy. See, he's a different type of player. DeSean Jackson is the kind of guy who is not a physical beast. He'll beat you in a foot race, and he'll have to try to out-finesse you for the ball. But if he's angry and he wants it, then he's going to take it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Starting to see if there's anybody else out there standing out for me. Not really, no. So I'm going to talk to you about some guys that probably aren't angry enough then. For me, they might be good players, but they just don't seem angry enough for me. Pierre Garçon.
Oh, Pierre Garçon. You know, so many people, you know, people are talking him up because he's being signed as the number one guy in Washington. And I think the thing about talking him up like that is it's fine, but he was kind of, he was definitely a starter in Indianapolis. And he definitely had Peyton Manning throwing to him. And so how do you expect him to change that radically? The only reason that I think that he can change that radically is because he's going to have so many targets. But is he going to be angry? Is he going to be consistent? Or is he just going to drop a lot of footballs and not really want to get too physical? And I think that's a real possibility.
Darius Heyward-Bey, talented player. Oh, not angry enough for me.
No, he's a super talented player. I mean, if he was angry, then he'd fight through more injuries. If he was angry, then he'd catch the balls that come his way. And maybe the lights turned on for him, and I hope it has, because, frankly, Oakland, the wasteland of receiver fantasy, you know, that everybody thinks is like a, you know, growing garden of fantasy, and really, it's just a cesspool.
Well, because they still have a quarterback that shouldn't be in the league at the helm, and Carson Palmer at this point. He's just not.
Because Oakland is one of those teams, because they still have all these Al Davis rejects. So they still have all these guys who are lightning fast, huge, should be amazing. But the problem is that they have so many mental problems, they never put it together. So everybody's drafting them relatively high because of their sky-high potential. But they're never doing anything because they have a terrible quarterback and usually ridiculous coaching.
Dwayne Bowe.
Well, Dwayne Bowe's produced before, and Dwayne Bowe can produce again. I believe Matt Cassel is a bit of an anchor on him, but Dwayne Bowe, he's not my favorite, but I would definitely have him on my team.
Yeah, just not angry enough for me. I think of what a great player he could be if he was angry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's kind of, same thing with Percy Harvin. Good player, tremendous talent. If he was just a little angrier, Greg Jennings is not angry enough for me.
No, Greg Jennings is definitely not angry
enough. You know? So, who else we got here? Nobody even worth talking about in Cleveland. As far as A.J. Green is angry enough for me.
Oh, yeah, A.J. Green is definitely an angry man.
Yeah, is definitely angry enough for me. So, I mean, there's quite a few of those. Torrey Smith, I hope, is angry enough. Julio Jones, I hope, is angry enough. I think they both are.
Yeah, I think Julio Jones is going to be just fine. I think Roddy White is a guy who might not be angry enough, but he still plays well enough anyways.
Yeah. Now let's talk about some names that you might not know at running back. So I'll just throw these guys out to you and why it is people should keep an eye out for them. Arizona Cardinals, Ryan Williams.
Well, he's coming back from an injury. He has the terribly overrated Beanie Wells in front of him.
This and injury problem.
And yeah,
Beanie Wells is not angry enough for running back. It applies to them too. Why did Peyton Hillis have that great season? He was angry as hell.
Yep. Yeah. And then
when he stopped being angry, he wasn't as effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Beanie Wells is not angry enough.
No, Beanie Wells just doesn't seem to understand what it takes to be an NFL player.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have to be normal. You don't have to be anything to be an NFL player other than just willing to put yourself out there and play 100% every single week.
Yeah, if you have the skills, you have the physical attributes, that's the key. That's the you know,
but you have to have the desire. You have to want to do it. If you don't want to be out there every week, well, then it's going to show up. And I don't care how much physical skills you have, you're just going to be a loser.
Now, this next guy I don't think is completely off the radar, but he is a, if you're a real casual person listening to this and you're looking for a name to steal late, Jaquizz Rodgers.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he could very well fit the Falcons' new mode, new offensive strategy better than Michael Turner. And so he could be a really interesting guy. it's really hard because there's a couple of teams that love the workhorse back so much. Cincinnati's been one of those teams. Atlanta's been one of those teams. They have guys that are behind their starters that everybody says, oh, that guy could be an amazing fantasy player if he ever gets a chance. They talk up those guys at the beginning of the season and say, oh, Bernard Scott, he's totally going to get a chance here. Oh, this guy, he's totally going to get a chance here. And then at the end of the day, they go right back to those starters and those guys don't get a chance. Same thing could hold true here.
Yeah. Ronnie Hillman, a guy who I worry a little bit about his health, but...
You know, everything that I've been seeing is so back and forth on Ronnie Hillman. Like, he sounds like he's got a lot of talent, and definitely, you know...
He's got great speed and agility, cuts to the outside brilliantly, doesn't run inside the tackles well enough, but then again, on that team, that's Willis McGahee's job, who, of course, has a knucklehead.
Yeah, but... You know, Willis McGahee, I mean, he's one of the... I think it's the question is now is that their offense is going to change so much from... Like, no offense will change as much as Denver's, period. Just going from Tim Tebow and the run game, we couldn't pass the ball if we were, you know, paid to.
Yeah.
To this year where, you know, with Peyton, who is so precise... And he needs everything to be exactly the way it's supposed to be. So I think that what's really going to come down is, like, Peyton hasn't used really, you know, a scat back kind of thing. He always likes those inside the,
that's right,
the tough runners.
That's right. Here's a guy I'm sure people have heard of, but if they're not thinking of him yet, still, we better throw the name Rashad Jennings out there.
Yeah, I mean, if Maurice Jones-Drew decides that he doesn't want to come to play because he's a dumbass, then...
Say he plays the entire season and stays healthy. And the second part might be the more difficult one right now. What do you think we'll get out of him?
Out of Jones-Drew?
No, out of Jennings.
Rashad Jennings? I think the Rashad Jennings on that team, wow. I mean, the number one problem is, with Maurice Jones-Drew, he's an angry little man.
Oh, yes. Maurice Jones-Drew is one angry mofo.
Yep. And he is one of those guys that even though the passing game could be average, Maurice Jones-Drew is enough to take the running game. You can stack 8 in the box against him, and he's still going to bust through it.
Yeah.
Rashad Jennings needs to answer the question of whether you can stack 8 in the box up, and are you going to stop him? Because... Preseason stats mean diddly squat.
They don't mean anything. He's averaging 5 yards a carry in the preseason. Really doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could like him, but at the end of the year, I think that if he plays the whole season as a starter, I think you're talking about 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Now, this next guy is behind probably the best running back in the league, but a running back with a bit of an injury bug. And he's probably one of the 10 best running backs in the league. So, again, Ben Tate.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Tate has shown really well, especially last year. He was awesome. I mean, they almost had 2,000-yard running backs, which is pretty amazing. Like, and I think the problem is it almost earns Ben Tate the overdrafted, you know, clause. Because he is such a good running back. But the problem is that Arian Foster is probably the best running back in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you talk about Ben Tate coming in, he's just not going to get the touches as long as Arian Foster's healthy, unless they're blowing teams away. We had Ben Tate last year in one of the leagues, and we actually wound up playing him as a starter a lot because we would look at teams that we thought Houston was going to blow away. And we would try to put him in there because then we realized that it's just like, okay, well, at least in garbage time, Ben Tate could rack up 100 yards.
And it happened more than once.
And it did happen. And that's the great thing about Ben Tate. But the problem is you just can't guarantee the usage that he's going to get. So that's why, to me, he's overdrafted for my taste.
He's overdrafted. Okay, this next guy is, I think, still slightly under the radar despite a really good preseason and definitely emerging as the number one running back on his team, Stephen Ridley from the Patriots.
Yeah, the Patriots are... They're not a Mike Shanahan backfield, but they're definitely a team where you can't necessarily trust any one player from week in and week out. Ridley seems to be the top dog right now, but I can guarantee that there are going to be games where Shane Vereen has the better stats.
Yeah, that's true. That said, this is... For years, you've been unable to play and trust a Patriots running back. He might emerge as the one guy that they can't take off the field. He's looking slightly like that. He's looking very good. So let's keep on moving here. David Wilson.
Well, David Wilson. I mean, Ahmad Bradshaw is really very... he's shown to be kind of brittle himself. He's a talented player, but I'm not 100% sure that he's a stud player. I just don't think he's got enough in him. David Wilson has shown some really nice things in camp and in the preseason games, so he is definitely going to back him up. So that means almost 90% for sure he gets some starts. Does he win the job over Ahmad Bradshaw? You know, probably not this year, but maybe next year. The problem is, and again, rookie running backs in keeper leagues, you love them, but everybody's always overdrafting them. They're drafting them too high. I want a guy like that in a keeper league in the 12th, 10th round at the highest, because you can't guarantee what you're going to get out of him, and I want to be able to keep him next year.
Well, let's look at this. I mean, yeah, okay, you had the year. You had LT. You know, I mean, he was great right from the start as a running back. Let's look back in the year. There was three running backs drafted in the first five picks. Cadillac Williams had a great first year and then fell off.
Yep.
Ronnie Brown, who was generally pretty consistent but never a superstar, and Cedric Benson, who took forever to get good. They'll end up having some fantasy value at some point in their careers. They all end up having good careers or very good careers, and they all end up, though, taking a while before you really knew what you were getting from them or understanding who and what they were. Like I say, Cadillac was great off the
Yeah, you know, his first season was amazing, but every season after that was terrible. Because, yeah. I mean, we had him. I mean, we were drafting Cadillac in the top five picks in his second year.
Yeah.
And he was a giant bust for that.
Yeah. Here's a guy I think is really talented, but I don't think is ever going to match his talent on the field. And that's Tywan Jones backing up McFadden.
Well, Tywan Jones, I mean, you need to see him in real game action. It's not good enough to see him in preseason action. It's not good enough to see him on the practice field. Sure, he's got great speed. He's just like one of their wide receivers. He's got all the measurables you're looking for. But does he actually have the ability to play the position on a week-in, week-out basis? That jury's out on that.
Okay, here's a guy off the radar again. Rashard Mendenhall.
Oh, Mendenhall. I mean, Mendenhall. Oh, you know what? If you want to talk about a guy who I wish was angrier, Rashard Mendenhall is a guy that I wish was angrier.
Yeah.
Because even last season when he wound up, you know, or the previous seasons when he's been the starter, he has all the physical talent, all the tools necessary to play running back in the Steelers offense. But the truth of the matter is that he's never put it together all the way. I like him because I think that people are undervaluing him because of the injury. But if he comes through, he could be a nice running back three.
I think you're looking at a guy who is going to be, you can get late, who eventually is going to emerge as the number one running back on that team, just because the other guys he's competing with really aren't that talented.
No,
and it's really, to me, more about them than him.
Yeah, they're unbelievably bad, yeah, for the most part. Like Isaac Redman, I consider undraftable. There are people who are drafting Isaac Redman in the fifth round, and I say, you're a psycho.
Here's another guy, talk about an angry guy, and both the knucklehead and angry. Both have, you know, once hurt him, once helped him, but Lynch, Marshawn Lynch.
Oof, Marshawn Lynch.
Now, I'm not going to talk about him. The thing about him is, I don't know where to draft him because I'm like, he's so angry. He's talented. He finally had that great season last year. On the other hand, he's been so inconsistent. He's got such a high knucklehead factor, and he got paid. So I don't know where to go with him. So I've been avoiding him just because I don't know what to say about him. But the guy I'm thinking about is the guy who, when he gets his chance to replace him, and he will at some point. I don't know if it's this year or next year or when, but when he gets his chance, and that's Robert Turbin, looks like a real potential stud.
Well, they've done a really nice job drafting this last year.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to look. You got the fact that they managed to take their quarterback, their current starting quarterback, Russell Wilson,
in the third round.
In the third round, you got Turbin here, and I mean, they could feel they're going to be a really surprising team. You know, they're looking to win that division, and I mean, there's not that much competition in that division ultimately.
The 49ers.
The 49ers are the competition. And so when you look at that, you know, I think that they could be surprising. They've got a lot of young talent, and I think that people could overlook it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What about the backup? Steven Jackson is obviously the number one. He's been healthy for the last couple of years. He's been hurt a couple times. You have Isaiah Pede, high draft pick, talked up, who's performing terribly. Then you have Daryl Richardson below him, who's been performing really great.
Yeah, because I think Richardson's like a seventh-round draft pick.
Yeah, exactly, who's been way out-producing Pede, who's the higher pick and the one.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Fisher's going to give the shot to Isaiah Pede, but when Steven Jackson goes down, I think that we're going to see them first give the ball to Isaiah Pede, but it could become a timeshare with Daryl Richardson.
That's really probably likely, quick, yeah.
Really
yeah.
quick.
Yeah. There's backing up Frank Gore, Kendall Hunter, and Brandon Jacobs.
And I think they even have Anthony Dixon. I mean, they got so many.
I think they have released Dixon now, or are about to release him. But
I don't. Well, I think the last thing that I heard today was that Dixon's going to do many great things for this team this season. There's a prime example of some coach speak for you, but I think that
beware of coach speak.
Yeah, the number one thing is that the 49ers just have tons of running backs. And nobody really knows how they're going to use them. They're definitely going to use them. There's no question about that. Kendall Hunter, to me, is probably the best bet now for everything, because Frank Gore could be a little long in the tooth. Frank Gore may have the most talent of all of them, but Kendall Hunter probably has the freshest legs. Brandon Jacobs is just a guy who is nowhere near as good as he should be.
Okay, and Washington Redskins, I'm just going to throw out the four names who are in the mix there, and you just give me your thoughts. If you have any thoughts on any of these guys, Roy Helu, Evan Royster, Tim Hightower, and Alfred Morris.
Well, Tim Hightower is one of those guys who will never, ever, ever stay healthy. The only real reason that he's on that roster is because he does a great job on the blocking. Everybody is talking up Evan Royster as the guy who's like suddenly come out of nowhere to be the starter. Alfred Morris, though, is the guy who almost seems most likely to be the starter come week one. And Roy Helu is a guy who probably has the most talent of all of them by quite a long shot, but they don't trust him because he's
another guy who doesn't stay healthy.
Because he doesn't stay healthy and because he's just small and all that stuff. And the thing is that, well, I think Shanahan, in his senility, has had a problem because
he said that right.
Yeah, in the early days with Denver, he would pick whichever running back he felt like, and he would install him as the starter, and that guy was pretty much guaranteed for good fantasy numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, and I think with Washington, what we're seeing now is that he's not picking one running back. He's picking just a cluster of running backs, and he's just playing them in any given game. So you can't even say, like, oh, well, it's going to be this guy. This average player is going to be fine because he plays for Shanahan.
Yeah, so he's thinking it's the system, not the players. He's like, the old ball coach is still in Washington. all right, let's just quickly talk about just in the last few minutes here. We're just going to go through and talk about quarterbacks who looks like you're going to get good value from still a little bit later than people might realize. Joe Flacco.
I mean, if they finally take the reins off and allow Flacco to play the game as he wants to play, then he could have some great value. Because he now with Torrey Smith, that could be the offense opener that he's been looking for.
This next guy's a little bit scary, but has looked better in camp, and certainly it shows. I think it's his running that makes him intriguing. That's Christian Ponder.
Ponder scares the poop out of me because I don't trust the Vikings at all. I mean, I can't. Like, Toby Gerhardt's not very talented, and Adrian Peterson is supremely talented, but you can't tell if he's actually going to be anything this year. And their wide receivers, I mean, Percy Harvin's great, but they don't want to play him full time, and then they don't have much of anything. I mean, Jerome Simpson is could be good, but he's got a massive knucklehead factor.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's just so many question marks. And Ponder, if he runs, then he could be value, but yeah, he scares me.
All right, here's another guy who you probably will see the field this year, and I think he's probably going to do very well. That said, what you want him for is for next year, keep an eye out for him, or even more so for keeper leagues. And tell this to everybody kind of the story of Nick Foles, the backup to Michael Vick in Philadelphia.
Well, everybody pegged Mike Kafka as the backup to Michael Vick. And I think that when we saw Kafka play, he's been pretty good. But when he got injured, Nick Foles got the chance to come in. Now, Nick Foles is prototype NFL quarterback. I think
it's like 6'5", 236 or something like that.
And he's looked amazing playing not only against the second and third stringers, but also pretty well against the first string guys. And I think that it's one of those cases where I just happened to read that Michael Vick has his contract changes after this year. So they have an out in Vick's contract. And I think that Vick is one of those guys who the sky is the limit for the guy, but the injury factor is so high for Vick right now, you have to question whether or not it's worth it. And I think for us, you know, that couple of years before when we were looking at Kevin Cobb, we were drafting Kevin Cobb, and then really, really late, even though he hadn't proven anything again, we were still picking up Michael Vick very, very late. Just because we thought, well, what happens if Kevin Cobb gets injured? Then we can have Michael Vick to play in that case. And it just turned out that Michael Vick becomes the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, and we have a starter in for a late keeper. Well, I have the sneaking suspicion that we could be very well looking at lightning striking twice in the Philadelphia Eagles camp, and that next year we could be staring at Nick Foles as the starting quarterback.
Okay, two rookies. Do you expect anything out of Ryan Tannehill or Russ Wilson in Seattle?
It's not so much that I expect things out of them. I expect them to put up solid rushing numbers. I mean, if Ryan Tannehill puts anything up, it'll be shocking. And it's not his fault. It's because they've given him no wide receivers. But I think the thing is that I like both of them from a long-term perspective.
Two more guys trending up, Jay Locker and Robert Griffin III.
Again, I mean, we're seeing a lot of these rushing quarterback types entering the NFL, and they're
young
getting,
too.
Yeah, and they're getting a good chance to play and to start. And I think that the great thing about those guys is that their legs offer fantasy value. And Jake Locker is one of those guys. He's got suspect accuracy, but he's got the will to win, and he has the legs to put up fantasy points.
When we say suspect accuracy, and you say the will to win and legs to put up fantasy points, he's still not Tim Tebow in terms of accuracy.
No. Nor is he Vince Young in that whole will to win. Like, this is a guy who, see, Vince Young was a guy who had the will to win.
Yeah,
but the problem was he had no will to do anything else.
Yeah, exactly. It's only when he's on the field playing a game that he actually gave a damn.
Yeah.
So,
whereas Jake Locker, I feel, is a guy who will try extremely hard to get better no matter what.
So if you have to take a guy to be your QB number two between Locker and Griffin, Wilson, and Ponder, and a few of these other guys that we mentioned, just young guys, who's the guy who you would think, I'm comfortable with him being my QB number two?
Oh, Jake Locker.
Yeah, me too.
I totally feel, because I feel like he's got great high upside. He's got a solid team around him from an offensive standpoint. He's got the tools needed. He's been seasoned for a season. But, you know, he's sat behind Hasselbeck. He's got Hasselbeck still there. You know, Griffin could be awesome, but is it likely that the Cam Newton factor is going to strike twice? I don't think so.
Okay, a few guys then that just scare the poop out of me. I'm going to avoid a quarterback. We talk about that. Jay Cutler, largely because he's got a knucklehead offensive coordinator, Mike Tice. I don't want to go anywhere near him, despite having Brandon Marshall with him again.
Oh, Jay Cutler, he's one of those guys that for a couple of years we were able to get him late, and I think he even guided us to a couple of championships. But the real truth is that he fell off that cliff. All of his random play elements just came right through, and Tice is not the guy to rein that in and tell him exactly how to play. It's not going to happen.
This next guy can absolutely throw the ball. Unfortunately, he's not going too much because he's on such a great running team. Matt Schaub.
Yeah, Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub is a huge talent at the quarterback. Matt Schaub is, you could say that he's almost Peyton Manning-esque the way he plays the game. But absolutely, when you have Arian Foster and Ben Tate, why the hell do you need anybody throwing the football? I mean, they proved that when they were down to their third-string quarterback in TJ Yates, and they still managed to move ahead in the playoffs for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as long as they've got a running game, they're going to use it.
Matt Cassel.
Well, Matt Cassel, he is a prime example of a system quarterback who excelled in the Patriots system. Here, and, you know, he did okay when he was with Charlie Weiss, who, of course, was installing the Patriots system. And then when Charlie Weiss left, Cassel goes in the tank. Cassel is just one of those guys who I just totally dislike him because I don't ever feel like you're going to get the right system again.
Carson Palmer?
Well, Carson Palmer has had a couple or three really great years about 5 or 6 years ago. And everything since has been nothing but garbage. So that's what I expect out of him this year. Nothing but garbage.
I don't know. Whoever's going to end up throwing the ball for the Jets, Sanchez, Tebow?
Well, ideally for Jets fans, they don't have to throw the ball. But unfortunately, I suspect they probably will, and I suspect that most fans aren't going to like it.
Worst looking offense in preseason, I think, of any team.
They didn't score a touchdown.
just
how bad do you have to be to not manage to throw?
But Tebow always puts up fantasy points because the style of player he is when he gets in there.
Oh, absolutely! I love Tebow from.
I would actually draft. I would draft him in the 12th, 14th round in that range, like super late. If I have a big enough bench in a league with a big enough bench, I'll draft him and stash him aside.
Oh, absolutely, because you guarantee. Because Sanchez is one of those guys who will never, ever, ever pick it up, I don't think.
Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers, I mean, this guy is one of those cases where he showed so great for a few seasons there. Now, he seems to have a problem with his arm strength, and that's going to cost him. And he also has another giant problem. Do you know what that giant problem is?
Receiving core?
Nope.
Norv Turner.
That's his giant problem.
He's an idiot. Yeah.
He's got a head coach who's a moron who should have been fired.
He's an awful head coach. Tremendous coordinator.
He is a tremendous coordinator, but the problem is that he's not coordinating San Diego.
Yeah.
And he should be. Not coaching.
But his receiving core is a little questionable, too. And even at the run game, they're just, I don't know about that team, they're just treading water.
Yeah.
A guy who I was high on last year, and apparently was high thinking that, because Josh Freeman didn't exactly turn out to be what I thought he would.
Josh Freeman could be a one-year wonder, because he's not showing well, and now, Shiano is going to be instituting like such a massive, you know, overhaul on that offense to really make it primarily run based. And Vincent Jackson is a totally different. I mean, hell, look at Mike Williams, the receiver on that team. You know, there's a guy. He was a first-year wonder, too.
He looked like he was just going to be something really special.
I mean, you looked at the two of them together, and
now he's
like,
not even
oh,
draftable.
My. Yeah. And you were just thinking, this is going to be great. This team is up and coming. And
but they
now,
do have an anchor receiver, a big anchor receiver now, in yep. Vincent Jackson.
Yeah, and the question is Freeman actually good enough to get him the football?
Yeah, and they bet he better be because, you know, they got Dan Orlovsky behind him. And
yeah, that's right. And he could...
He and, sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and St. Louis Rams. Here's a player who I think is great talent. I still think he's going to have a very good career. But I'm not going anywhere near Sam Bradford.
Whew, Sam Bradford, yeah. He's another guy who took a monstrous step back last year and has always had suspect talent around him. I mean, we are so far removed from the greatest show on turf that... It's not even funny. Like, I love Jeff Fisher. Love the guy. Think
perfect
he's a
coach.
Great coach. But
his coaching staff there in general is very strong.
But I just don't trust them to be able to do anything.
No, his receiving core is probably the second worst in the league behind the Dolphins, and is yeah. pushing them. So, you know, I mean, and Cleveland obviously also
has
a horrible receiving core, too. So, I mean, these guys, you know. But the receiving core is no good. It's not like he has a tight end even to dump off to or anything. Like, there's nothing really there for him. Plus, his offensive line isn't tremendously good, and there's the ankle injury he's probably going to have to play through for the entire season. So those things all have kind of...
I mean, their offensive line is so bad, they just traded for Wayne Hunter, the worst offensive lineman in the league. You know? I mean, how bad is this?
How bad are you? Exactly. Even Arizona wouldn't trade for him.
Yeah.
Their offensive line's even worse.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, final thoughts about strategy, lessons learned, trends, or anybody who you love or hate that we haven't covered yet. Any last, let's wrap it up here in a final kind of, you know, toss it out there thing.
Well, I think, you know, first off, one of the things that you and I really tend to go against is we don't like rookie running backs. Like, we have been burned so many times by rookie running backs. Like, everybody talks about Trent Richardson and how he could be the bell cow. Everybody talks about, I think it's Doug Martin in Tampa Bay and how he's going to be the starter there. And there's all these rookie running backs. And you know what? One of them may emerge. But if you go back and look at history, well, history says that they're not, that not everybody is going to do exactly as well as you hope. And more than likely, you're going to get burned.
Yeah, you're probably 1 out of 10 times you'll get a guy who can win your league who's a rookie who just shows up. If you know what? That means you lost 9 times. Does that make you a genius, or does that make it worth it? Well, for me, no.
No, absolutely. No. It doesn't. You know, I think that this year there's some really, really great finds that I think can be found later in the drafts. But I think the problem is the middle rounds this year. Before, we've kind of been saying, you know, you were great for like the first 6 rounds, and then after that, it got dicey. Well, here, I think you're great for the first 4 rounds, and then it's like 5, 6, and 7 where you're getting dicey, because you're questioning then who is the best choice based on the players that are available, and they're all question mark, just riddled with question marks.
And in the middle rounds, like I say, that's why I think we're looking at receivers. Because it looks like there's so much depth and good players there, you're still going to be able to get somebody who can produce for you, for the receivers in the middle rounds. That's my thoughts. This is what you're looking at this year, folks. You really need to get yourself a running back who you know is going to get touches early and who you can trust to stay healthy. And a first round or two, concentrate on the running backs. That's what we're looking at. Unless there's a receiver. If Andre Johnson's still there at the beginning of the third round, of course you're doing it.
Yeah, if Calvin Johnson's there, then, you know, sure, you got to take
both of them got a little anger in them.
They're beasts. Yeah, just a little.
Just little. So, you know what? You want to do that, definitely. But, I mean, I think you don't want to end up being that guy who has a running back who's your running back 2 or even your running back number 1 who's in a timeshare. And there's a lot of those in the NFL now. And a lot of people seem to end up with that. So you definitely want to watch out for that. Get yourself that running back, then get yourself the good quarterback, and then look at filling out some of the depth in the wide receiver corps to try and stay just to guys who are emerging or guys who are safe, not to guys who are were great in the past, like Randy Moss. And finally, you know what? Late, then that's where you grab the backups and the prospects that we had maybe kind of mentioned, whose names you hadn't heard. And so hopefully you heard something from us that you didn't hear from everybody else. I'm Mo, M-O, at We Talk Podcasts, and Mo _ We Talk on Twitter. You can reach me in those two ways. You want to have any feedback? We do have an auction league that we're looking to get some people to fill up that we're just running on NFL.com. So anybody wants to play us, what's the name of the league, Brett?
What is the name? I think it's All In Fantasy.
All
if
in
you
fantasy.
Email us, then we can send you all the details on that. My email is Brett, that's B-R-E-T-T, _ We, or at WeTalkPodcast.com. That's Brett _ WeTalk is on Twitter. Basically, you know, anytime if you want to play us or if you want to get more information or anything like that, then feel free to contact us. Go to WeTalkPodcast.com. And otherwise, I think for me, touches are king.
Touches are king. And there's a line that you ended the podcast with last year. Come play us. We'll see you and we'll beat you. So with that, maybe we'll go ET one more time.